Hello, I'm Liz, a reader on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition of the Talking News is for Wednesday, the 17th of February, 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity, Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post: this remains in paper envelopes and not the usual plastic wallets, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Helen, Simon, Liz, Christine, Ian, Angela, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country, we have the Flashback Quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, a look at plans to make the Black Country the UK cycling capital, the weather, a new feature called Sounds from Nature, information about digital inclusion, and rounding all that off, an edition of Tales of the Barn from Graham Fisher. But we start with some local news brought to us by Angela, Ian and Christine.
Local authorities across the Black Country and Staffordshire have received nearly £270 million in extra funding during the pandemic, new figures show. Ministers have allocated more than £8 billion nationally to help councils fight the pandemic, including emergency funding to support rapid testing, outbreak management and vulnerable residents. Figures from the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local show Staffordshire Council has received £89.35 million since last March, while Sandwell Council has been given £51.57 million. Wolverhampton Council received £43.51 million, Dudley Council got £43.28 million, and Walsall Council has had £41.5 million. Across the West Midlands, councils have received more than £462 million in new funding, according to the figures, with Birmingham Council receiving the largest amount of support at £193.23 million. It comes amid dire warnings of the impact of the pandemic on public finances, with at least 12 local authorities across the country said to be in crisis talks with the government. According to reports, 12 local councils have entered talks with the MHCLG regarding the possibility of Section 114 bankruptcy notices being issued. They include Sandwell Council, although the authority is the only one in the region to run a scheme giving people on low incomes a 100% reduction. Councillor Louise Miles said council tax would rise in Wolverhampton to protect vital services, while Dudley Council said its increase would come after a year which has brought unprecedented challenges to our public services.
Council tax will rise by almost 5% in Wolverhampton, it has been confirmed. Residents in the city will pay 4.99% more next year after the increase was confirmed by councillors. It is the most that councils are allowed to increase the tax by, with a general increase of 1.99% and 3% specifically for adult social care. Councils across the region are increasing the tax by the same amount ahead of the new financial year, with borough councils in Dudley and Staffordshire announcing the move in recent weeks. Senior councillors warned there could be a financial black hole of almost £30 million by 2023-2024 due to the current pressure on finances. Councillor Louise Miles, Finance Chief for the Council, said, "We manage our money well and we can set a balanced budget for 2021-2022 without the need to make significant cuts to services. But this is only possible by raising council tax by 1.99% and imposing the government's adult social care levy, which is an additional 3%. When the government works out how much funding to give to councils, they factor into the calculation that we will raise council tax by the maximum amount possible, and they expect us to impose the 3% adult social care levy as well. If we didn't do that, there would be a shortfall, which could only be met by cutting essential services."
A major shake-up of a council's health committee has been called for after it emerged councillors failed to attend its meetings. The low attendance rate at the Dudley's Health and Wellbeing Board, which helps coordinate work with the NHS, hospitals and GPs, has triggered a call for change. But the board's chairman, Councillor Nicholas Barlow, stressed the authority's COVID response plans have not been affected by the lack of numbers. Speaking at a recent meeting of the authority's Overview and Scrutiny Management Board, Councillor David Tyler claimed high absenteeism had slowed efforts to improve health. He said, "If you look at the numbers of people giving apologies and look back through the Health and Wellbeing Board's minutes, it's as if almost as many people are giving apologies for not being at the meetings as there is at the meeting." The Health and Wellbeing Board has four councillors and since the start of the pandemic has met three times. July's meeting was attended by three members, while at September and December's meetings only two were present. Councillor Barlow, Cabinet Member for Health and Adult Social Care, has chaired every meeting since July 2019. Saying councillors hadn't been able to attend because of work and other commitments, he stressed the council's response to COVID wasn't affected. Pointing out there is also a Health and Adult Social Care Committee, he added, "Yes, it is very disappointing that members haven't attended as many meetings as they should. It is down to the leaders of both political groups to do what is necessary to make sure membership is robust and we have the right members on those committees. The lack of members attending the board has had no detrimental effect to the council's ability to manage the coronavirus pandemic."
Campaigners fighting plans for a mini village on Greenbelt land, which serves as a buffer between Dudley and Wolverhampton, say they will not tolerate a single brick being laid on the crucial nature corridor. Campaigner Tony North said plans to build 600 new homes on land known as the Seven Cornfields between Sedgley and Penn would have a devastating effect on the local environment. "We will continue our fight to insist that not a brick is laid on that site," he said. He has been backed by Wolverhampton South West MP Stuart Anderson and Dudley North MP Marco Longhi, who have both pledged to fight the proposals. "No way should one single house be built on that land," said Mr. Anderson. "I will do everything I can to stop this plan." It was revealed last week that Barrett Homes had drawn up proposals to develop fields between the Park Hall Hotel and Colton Hills School, prompting one councillor to threaten his resignation if the scheme went ahead. More than 7,000 residents have signed a petition objecting to any proposed development on the 284-acre site, which straddles Wolverhampton and South Staffordshire councils. The adjoining Alder Coppice, a designated ancient woodland which comes under Dudley Council, is not part of the proposals and is a protected local nature reserve. Barrett and David Wilson Homes wanted to build a total of 1,300 homes in the area, but the proposals received a setback after South Staffordshire Council declined to include the site on its list of locations suitable for housing. Barrett has now come up with a scaled-down Wolverhampton-only scheme. Councillor Paul Birch, whose Blakenhall ward covers the site, said he would resign from the council if it went ahead.
Friends, family and well-wishers waved goodbye to beloved Tipton twin Doris as she was driven to her final resting place via her favourite supermarket. Doris Hobday and twin sister Lillian Cox became celebrities as Britain's oldest identical twins, stealing the heart of the nation with their smiles and quick wit during appearances on TV and radio. Doris died in January, aged 96, after testing positive for coronavirus, and her funeral took place in Tipton on Monday afternoon. She was laid to rest with her husband Ray, who she lost 11 years ago after 65 years of marriage. Her family chose a longer route for the funeral cortege so people could pay their respects to Doris despite COVID restrictions limiting attendance at the funeral. Doris's beloved Asda in Greatbridge was a part of the route, and staff and shoppers lined up to clap and wave as the cortege passed by. Doris's little sister Lil was also rushed to hospital with COVID and spent 2 weeks on oxygen, steroids, vitamins and antibiotics. She was discharged from hospital on January the 18th and has been recovering at home since. The pair had enjoyed bingo and watching Fast and Furious together, mainly for Jason Statham, a picture of whom was packed in Doris's handbag ready for her final journey. A fundraising page for Beacon, a charity close to Doris's heart, has raised more than £6,000 in her memory. The family said the charity helped Doris look after her husband, Ray, for more than 20 years when he lost his eyesight suddenly during their long marriage. To donate, visit justgiving.com/fundraising/Doris Hobday. Three more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen, back with another weekly roundup of everything that's been happening at Beacon. I don't know about you, but I'm feeling hopeful this week. Hopeful that we're now edging our way out of winter. I've been trying my best to get out for daily walks for exercise and a change of scenery, but it's not much fun when it's so cold that you can't feel your fingers after a few minutes. A definite highlight of the winter months though is hot chocolate, and I've been averaging one a day these last few weeks. They're just not the same in summer, are they? First up this week, if you're an internet shopper, don't forget to pop on to Beacon's eBay store, where you can pick up a host of bargains and rare finds. This week, we've had a special for baseball fans, a new unread copy of What About the Villa? Forgotten Figures from Britain's Pro Baseball League 1890. Anything you purchase through the site helps to support people with sight loss as well. Head to www.ebay.co.uk/USR/Beacon Charity Shop to see our current listings. Don't forget, while our shops are closed, we're unable to accept any donations, but we so look forward to welcoming you all back when we're allowed to reopen. Now, you may have heard last week about the chance to win an incredible £1.1 million home while supporting Beacon. It really is a stunning property and comes complete with its own tennis court and hot tub. You have got to be in it to win it though, and entries start from as little as £5. If you're the lucky winner, the house is all yours. All reasonable legal fees are paid, along with the first year's council tax. Money raised from the prize draw online will be evenly split between the Beacon Centre for the Blind and at least one other charity. This could be as much as £50,000, which will go a long way to helping us support people with sight loss when they need us most. We've never needed your support more due to the impact of COVID-19. So why not enter the contest today using the code BEACON, and you really could win a home that could change your life. Head to www.granddraw.co.uk/beacon. Don't forget to use the code BEACON. What a fab session. I highly recommend it. They're not my words, but some of the great feedback from participants in our virtual activities. So if you haven't already, why not come along and join us? There's a packed schedule every week with something for every taste, including yoga, book club, a nostalgia session, and Foodie Friday to discuss all things food. All our sessions are free and everyone is welcome. You can find all the details on our social media pages. Just search for Beacon Centre on either Facebook, Twitter or Instagram. Or you can also email kimwilliams@kwilliams@beaconvision.org. Last this week, lockdown is tough for us all, but it doesn't have to stop you achieving what you want from life. If you have a disability and want to find work or improve your skills, we can help with free tailored support. Take the first step to a brighter future and get in touch. We've got employment projects around the region, but if you live in Cannock, Lichfield, Tamworth or Burton, our BBO project can help. Call 01902 880 111 Monday to Fridays. The Building Better Opportunities Evolve project is funded by the European Social Fund and the National Lottery Community Fund. That's it for this week. Stay safe, and hopefully I'll speak to you all soon.
Thanks, Helen. We now head back to the local news. Reading for us, we have Ed, Christine, Angela, and at the top of the bill, it's Ian.
The £24.1 million Dudley Interchange linking bus and trams has been given the go-ahead by the Combined Authorities Board. The interchange, due to be built on the site of the current bus station, is intended to connect buses with the West Midlands Metro, using the new Wensbury to Briley Hill line and the planned Sprint bus routes. The project is intended to be integral to the planned £1 billion redevelopment of Dudley, including £600 million for the town centre and the Castle Hill area. Work to extend the tram line from Wensbury to Briley Hill started last year and followed the extension along Piper's Row in Wolverhampton to the city's railway station. The West Midlands Combined Authority approved the plan for the Dudley Interchange, which includes capital and land contributions worth £3.5 million from Dudley Council on Friday. A report to councillors states, Dudley is in the midst of an exciting new chapter in its history, with work on a £1 billion programme of investment for the borough gathering pace. The new Dudley Interchange will be an integral part of this. Speaking at the meeting, Councillor Ian Ward, Birmingham City Council leader and WMCA portfolio holder for transport, said, "This is good news for Dudley. The interchange itself will deliver a multimodal facility for the town of Dudley and act as a catalyst for the redevelopment of the town centre. Dudley Metropolitan Borough Council have very ambitious plans for the regeneration of Dudley town centre, and the new interchange will be part of those plans." The meeting heard works were due to start in late 2021, and Councillor Ward said, "Hitting that date is vital to ensuring there is minimal disruption to bus services as a result of the metro extension, due to be finished by 2023.
More than 300 apartments are set to be created at Wolverhampton's landmark Beattie's Building and Car Park under plans submitted to Council Chiefs. Plans drawn up by SSYS Beattie's Limited will see a total of 306 homes created at the famous store and car park after it was sold off last year. It will see the upper part of the building at the rear converted into apartments, whilst the lower part will be kept for retail purposes if backed. Additional residential floors will be built on the existing building, but the shop frontage will be retained and restored, planners have said. A spokesman for SSYS said, "We have been impressed with the City Council on their positive and pragmatic approach to development in the city centre. We were proud to support the Council's application for the Government's future High Street Fund and are confident that the city centre will evolve to provide a vibrant and relevant space for local residents and businesses. We are further proud to partner with the city and the local people in regenerating the Beattie's Building, which was once a flagship shopping store and will hopefully once again become an iconic part of the city, comprising of residential, leisure, shopping and commercial space. We hope that our proposals will be received positively and provide a springboard for a successful and prosperous new year for all of the residents and businesses in the city."
Five new lateral flow testing centres are opening in the Dudley Borough, council bosses have confirmed. The new symptom-free testing centres will open this week and are based within places of worship across the borough. They are Holy Trinity Church Community Centre in Wordsley, Life Central Church in Halesowen, St Andrew's Church in Sedgley, St James's Church in Wollaston and the Salvation Army Church in Lye. Symptom-free testing is also available at Dudley's Leisure Centre, Saltwell's Education Centre and 30 pharmacies across the borough. In order to qualify for a test, a person must be an essential or key worker who lives or works in the borough, an unpaid carer, someone visiting care homes or who cannot follow the stay-at-home directive, and they must also be completely symptom-free. Councillor Nicholas Barlow, Dudley Council's Cabinet Member for Health and Adult Social Care, said, "I'm really pleased to welcome the five new locations, which will give a big boost to our symptom-free testing capacity. Testing is and will remain one of the crucial factors in reducing transmission and beating this virus, along with the vaccination programme, of course, as well as us all continuing to follow social distancing guidelines and remembering hands, face, space. If you fall into one of the eligible categories for symptom-free testing, please get regular tests and help stop this virus in its tracks.
Young people in Wolverhampton struggling to find work are being given a boost through a new fast-track training initiative being launched by the council. The new 8-week traineeship programme will offer people aged 19 to 24 the chance to undertake work experience placements with local companies. This will give them the chance to either get a job or gain access to the council's Kickstart scheme, which provides funding to employers to create job placements. The council's Cabinet Resources Panel is expected to approve funding for the programme, a partnership between Adult Education and Wolves at Work, to be delivered next Wednesday. In a report to the panel, Head of Adult Education Joanne Keatley said, "The total contract allocation we have been awarded for the initial funding period to the 31st of July is up to £308,000. This will enable the providers to support up to 90 young people through a traineeship and into a positive outcome such as a job, an apprenticeship or further learning. Wolves at Work will recruit 20 young people each month and secure work placements with a minimum of 70 hours. Councillor Dr. Michael Hardacre, the Council's Cabinet Member for Education and Skills, said, "Adult Education Wolverhampton is committed to ensuring people are work ready and gain the knowledge and behaviour they need to succeed in the workplace."
Vandals smashed the window of an ambulance, forcing it out of operation for patients needing emergency treatment. The vehicle was targeted as it drove along Dibdale Road West in Dudley at about 7 p.m. last Thursday night. There were no injuries and no patients were on board during the incident, West Midlands Ambulance Service have said. CCTV footage from the vehicle has been passed on to West Midlands Police as officers begin an investigation. Any potential witnesses have been asked to contact police. A spokesman for the ambulance service said, "Thankfully, our crew were uninjured and no patients were on board. But the vehicle is now off the road awaiting repair, which means there's one less ambulance available today." The CCTV footage from the vehicle will be shared with the police. A spokesman for West Midlands Police said, "We're investigating after an ambulance was damaged when a brick was thrown at it in Dibdale Road West, Dudley, just after 7 p.m. last Thursday."
We have two more news updates coming up, but now it's time to cross over to Mina.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' new Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. What was the wingspan of the prehistoric dragonfly? Question 2. How many words is Shakespeare thought to have invented? Question 3. What was the nationality of the man killed in bed by a falling cow? Question 4. What activity has been included as an extreme sport? Question 5. Which size shoe would fit the feet on the Statue of Liberty? And question 6. Which animal does cube-shaped poo? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show. But for now, good luck!
Thanks for those questions, Mina. Now we have some more local news, brought to us by Ed, Ian, Christine and Angela.
Wolverhampton's I-9 development has become the first office building in the Black Country to be handed a top digital award. The office building was handed the WideScore Gold certification in recognition of its digital connectivity and infrastructure. The award, given to the City Centre development, which is set to be complete in the summer, is a trusted benchmark in the field. Councillor Stephen Simpkins, Cabinet Member for City Economy, said the I-9 development is helping give investors confidence in Wolverhampton and it is attracting strong interest from potential occupiers who will benefit from excellent digital connectivity. "Achieving a WideScore Gold rating confirms our commitment to providing the very best facilities and the highest level of service to occupiers. Being the only office building in the Black Country to achieve this status reinforces how innovative our digital strategy is in Wolverhampton. I9 will help us stimulate economic growth in the city, bringing hundreds of jobs and much-needed opportunities for local people in our recovery from the current COVID-19 crisis. The development is also targeting a BREEAM Excellent rating to guarantee the long-term sustainability of the building and lower any potential impact on the surrounding environment. The finished building will provide up to 50,000 square feet of Grade A office space, which has potential for 5,600 square feet of retail or leisure space, chiefs have said.
Lists of important local heritage sites in the Black Country are set to be updated and extended after the region won £70,000 of government funding. Councils in Wolverhampton, Dudley, Sandwell and Walsall teamed up to bid for the funding under a national campaign to develop heritage lists. It allows councils to identify sites which have extra significance locally and will be taken into account if any changes to the site are proposed. Councillor Jacqueline Sweetman, Cabinet Member for City Assets and Housing at Wolverhampton Council, said, "The Black Country has some incredible heritage sites that deserve to be recognised and protected. Our region offers a fantastic array of attractions, steeped in history and character, and the funding will help us make sure our local heritage lists can accurately reflect that. I'm pleased to see that councils will be working together on this important project, and that history societies and local people will also be included in the creation of the lists. We are surrounded by a historic environment, and it is important that we do all we can to protect it." Dudley, Sandwell, Walsall and Wolverhampton already have local heritage lists, but this funding will enable them to be updated in accordance with recently published guidance provided by Historic England and in recognition of the Black Country becoming a UNESCO Global Geopark. Wolverhampton Council is the lead authority on the project and will be working with other Black Country councils as well as local societies, amenity groups and national historical organisations to update existing information and develop enhanced lists. Funding to create and update the lists came from the government's Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government. The Black Country is one of 22 areas in England to have made a successful bid.
The opening of Tesco in a former Waitrose store in Wolverhampton has been delayed until July. The shop off Penn Road closed on the 31st of December and Tesco bought it and originally planned for it to open in May. The delay is due to revised schedule of work, the supermarket giant said. A Tesco spokesperson said, "We're excited to be opening our first Tesco superstore in Wolverhampton and we look forward to serving the local community when our doors open in July." Bosses had previously said the 140 staff members at Wolverhampton Waitrose will transfer to Tesco. The Wolverhampton staff members have also been told that they can explore opportunities to continue working for Waitrose, either at their shops or online, rather than transfer to Tesco.
A swan and five ducks have been released back to a Black Country lake after they were rescued following an oil spill. In total, 25 birds were rescued from the water at Bumble Hole in Dudley by the RSPCA and local volunteers. They were sent to Stapley Grange Wildlife Centre in Nantwich, Cheshire, where they were carefully cleaned using washing up liquid to get rid of the toxic substance. If oil is not removed from water birds, it reduces the natural waterproofing in their plumage, leaving them at risk of dying from hypothermia, so it is vital that they are treated as soon as possible. This week, a swan and five ducks had recovered sufficiently and were released back to Bumble Hole, which is now free from pollutants. Three coots have also been returned to the wild, and it is hoped more birds will be returned to their home in the next few weeks. Animal rescuer RSPCA Inspector Boris Lasserre said, "This was the worst oil spill I have ever seen. It affected a lot of the birds very badly, with many of them collapsed and hypothermic. Fortunately, a team of local volunteers organised themselves into rescue groups and helped the RSPCA to save as many of the birds as we could. Sadly, five ducks and a goose did not recover, but I am delighted that the rest have been returned to full health in our care. It is always a nice part of the job to be able to release rehabilitated wildlife back to their natural habitat." Dudley Council and Severn Trent Water were working together to find the source of the spillage, which happened on December 29th. More than £25,000 was spent cleaning up the lake after it became polluted with diesel.
American investors have pulled out of attempts to take over Wolverhampton-based pubs and restaurants group Marsden's. Shares in Marsden's tumbled last Thursday after Platinum Equity Advisors said it will not make a firm offer. The Marsden's board had previously unanimously rejected three proposals from Platinum to buy all its shares. Its highest proposal had been 105 pence a share, which would have valued the group at £693 million, and followed offers of 88 pence and 95 pence per share. The board had rejected the last proposal on the basis that it very significantly undervalued Marsden's. Platinum had a deadline of February the 26th to either announce a firm intention to make an offer for the company or announce that it did not intend to make an offer. It comes as all of Marsden's 1,368 pubs remain shut to customers due to the national coronavirus lockdown. It told investors that it hopes to be buoyed by the increase in home working, which will benefit pubs in suburban locations. Shares in the company were 12.8% lower at 86.8 pence in early trading. A statement from Marsden said, "The board continues to believe that Marsden's is well placed to benefit from the opportunities in a post-COVID-19 trading environment, following the completion of the SA Brain transaction and harnessing factors such as a reduction in on-trade industry supply and increased home working that will benefit pubs in suburban locations. Marsden's has a strengthened balance sheet following the creation of the synergistic joint venture with Carlsberg and significant cash headroom, enabling it to continue to absorb the impact of the temporary government restrictions. We welcome the continued nationwide rollout of the vaccine program and look forward to rebuilding trading momentum once restrictions are lifted."
Coming up next, we have information read by Simon and Christine. First, we hear about Beacon's digital inclusion program, as well as an opportunity to get access to your very own Alexa device on which you can listen to the talking news.
Hello, I'm Simon, one of the IT trainers here at the Beacon Centre. During these digital and online times, do you find yourself struggling with technology? Could you benefit from IT support or training? Well, if you live in the Dudley or Wolverhampton boroughs, then the Beacon Centre may be able to help. Our digital inclusion project provides IT support and training to anyone living in the Dudley or Wolverhampton area with a visual impairment or any other disability. We can provide IT support and training either remotely or face-to-face where deemed safe. We can help with various issues from laptops to mobile phones and tablets and so much more. We can train you on using the internet or help with any other IT issues you may need support with. We may also be able to loan you equipment in some circumstances. If you would like more information, then contact the Beacon Centre on 01902 880111. We look forward to hearing from you.
For our Talking News listeners in Wolverhampton, Beacon have 15 Alexas to allocate, and they're free of charge. They will be allocated on a first-come, first-served basis, and members will need to fit the following criteria: live in Wolverhampton, have broadband in their home, have access to a smart device to download the app, smartphone or tablet. This can be done on a family member's device if they don't have one personally. To have a disability or have sight loss. The Alexa will belong to Beacon and are available to loan. If you would like to be one of the first to listen to the talking news on an Alexa and would like one on loan from Beacon and match the criteria, then contact Beacon for more information on 01902 880 111.
Now we head into some more local news, brought to us by Ian, Ed, Christine, and first up, it's Angela.
Travellers on the Metro will have to make alternative plans due to engineering works between Wolverhampton and Birmingham. The Midland Metro has announced that essential work will be taking place between Wolverhampton St George's and Birmingham Library at Centenary Square over the weekend of February the 20th and 21st. Services will begin to wind down from 8:30 p.m. on Saturday, February the 20th, and will restart from the first tram on Monday, February the 22nd. Anyone looking to travel during this time will be able to use their Metro ticket or pass on a number of other transport options. These include National Express Bus Services 74 and 79 and West Midlands Railway train services between Wolverhampton and Birmingham. There will also be a dedicated replacement bus service on Sunday, February the 21st, which will run every 15 minutes between Stand U at Wolverhampton Bus Station and Old Square in Birmingham City Centre. To find out more about the disruptions and where the bus will stop at, go to wmnetwork.co.uk/plan-your-journey/disruptions.
Severn Valley Railway is preparing to go full throttle for its first diesel event of the year. From May the 13th to the 16th, diesel fans will be able to experience a special event of epic proportions. In the largest gathering of diesel motive power at the railway since 2019, the 2021 Spring Diesel Bash offers visitors the opportunity to travel 100 miles in one day behind their pick of locomotives. Extensive planning has gone into coordinating a safe event that allows enthusiasts to travel over as many miles as possible behind their favourite locomotive classes, and there will be plenty to choose from. Visitors will select one of four train sets, each running three round trips. The engine house will be open to visitors as part of the ticket price. To reduce the risk of overcrowding and maintain visitor safety, at scheduled intervals throughout the day, passengers will be allocated a timed opportunity to get off at Highley to explore the engine house, delve into the intriguing history of Britain's railways, and visit the shop and restaurant. Passengers will also be able to leave the train at Bridgnorth and Kidderminster to make use of the station facilities. Helen Smith, the railway's general manager, said, "We have worked hard to put together an event that not only protects our visitors, but will also offer an unforgettable experience. We're taking every care to ensure we can operate in a COVID-secure way, using tried and tested methods, including reserved seating, complimentary hand sanitizer, and distancing measures on platforms. The SVR is backing every ticket with a COVID guarantee so that ticket holders can transfer to an equivalent event or date or receive a full refund."
A loving tribute has been written to Captain Sir Tom Moore by a Black Country youngster. Luca was given a task as part of his homeschooling from Glynn Primary School in Kings Wenford to write to someone of his choice. The 4-year-old's mother, Lisa Blakeway, said he decided to write it for Captain Sir Tom after they'd been watching the news and heard of his death at the age of 100 with COVID-19. She said, "When we saw it on the news, we were both quiet for a minute, before he turned to me and asked if he had died. When I told him that he had and that he was now in heaven, he said he was upset about the news, as he was amazed by his age and was inspired by him." Mrs. Blakeway said her son had learnt about Captain Sir Tom Moore and his life as a soldier, and said he wanted to write to him because he loved him. She said, "He's into his writing and loves writing about Marvel and all about the characters in that. But this piece was the thing he really wanted to focus on." The letter reads, "Dear Sir Tom, thank you for helping people. I will miss you. From Luca." Mrs. Blakeway said that she and her husband, Sean, were very proud of their son for his tribute and for being influenced by someone like Captain Sir Tom. She said, "It was nice to see him taking in what he's seen, especially someone like Sir Tom, and it's really just very heartwarming. I'm very proud and I hope he can influence more children his own age. Captain Tom, who raised almost £33 million for NHS charities by walking laps of his garden, died in Bedford Hospital on the 2nd of February. The Queen led tributes, saying he was an inspiration for the nation."
Viewers were blown away by a University of Wolverhampton graduate who claimed top prize in a Netflix show about glassblowing. Elliot Walker, 32, from Wolverhampton, took the top spot in the second series of Blown Away, a global glassblowing reality show, which is currently being live streamed on Netflix. Elliot studied for a master's degree in applied arts in the Wolverhampton School of Art and graduated in 2012. He secured a place in the reality show and took part with 10 other glass artists from around the world. The artists competed in North America's largest hot shop to push themselves to creative extremes in the quest to be named Best in Glass. In each episode, The glassblowers must impress a panel of art experts or risk being eliminated in pursuit of a life-changing prize that will enhance their career prospects. As winner of the show, Elliot has been awarded a residency at the Corning Museum and the Pittsburgh Glass Centre.
Rugby fans and couples trapped at home because of lockdown restrictions are being offered a taste of pub life with an emergency beer delivery service. The team behind Decanter Bars, based at Hartlebury, has teamed up with Chris Lowe, the owner of the Swan at Blakedown, near Kidderminster, and breweries to offer thirsty locals the chance of taking advantage of an eye-catching and COVID-safe service. Using an Italian Piaggio Ape, a three-wheeled flatbed vehicle, which they have named the Beerbulance, they started the service to coincide with the first match of the Six Nations against Scotland. The mobile pub takes orders via the Swan and also offers to serve up gin hampers, complete with mixers and garnishes to support small British distilleries. Ollie Turner, aged 41, and his 38-year-old brother Max from Decanter Bars said they had recognised that pubgoers were missing out on fresh cask beers while local breweries had stock they needed to sell. He said the Six Nations is always a massive time for the local pubs and breweries as rugby fans flock to watch the games. As fans, we were missing it as much as they were, and we wanted to do something to help sell excess stock that would otherwise have to go down the drain, so decided to take beer to locals in the Beerbulance. It is helping ourselves, the pub and breweries keep going, and is a lot of fun for the locals, and hopefully is helping break the monotony of the lockdown. Chris Lowe, the 43-year-old owner of the Swan, added, "The village is so much more quieter than it would normally be at this time of year, so it brings a bit of welcome fun to the roads. It's good to maintain the connection with our regulars and help cover costs till we can get back to some sort of normal."
Now we head to Roger, who has for us another edition of his Did You Know feature.
Hi everybody, this is Roger again with another episode of our new Did You Know portion for this week. And I've been digging around, finding some interesting, fascinating and downright odd facts from around the world for you to smile about. And where, of course, you'll find the answers to the quiz questions that were set earlier. Well, thinking back a bit, because he's the first one, and more than 300 million years ago, the Meganeura established itself as the largest known flying insect to ever exist on Earth. The dragonfly-like creature had a wingspan that stretched around 2.5 feet. This bug was that big, it could hunt prey like frogs and newts, and it could eat with its mandibles. And what about this one? Oh, Bill Shakespeare. He wrote some of the most beloved and revered pieces of literature the world has ever known. But in order to craft his plays and poems, he sometimes reported, and resorted, even, to making up his own words. In fact, the bard is said to have come up with more than 1,700 words, including moonbeam, laughable, eyeball, bump, puking, would you believe, champion, bedroom, excitement, and zany. And this is really weird. Because according to the BBC, in 2013, a Brazilian man was killed in bed when a cow fell through the roof and landed on him. He was lying in bed when a cow that had been grazing on a hill behind his house walked onto the asbestos roof and fell through, landing on the man, who later died. As strange as this incident might seem, locals claim that it was the third time a similar thing had happened in the area in the past 3 years, although no one was killed the first two times. And this one, folks, I don't think many will be taking up this unusual activity, because there are plenty of extreme sports out there if you happen to be an adrenaline junkie, from the classics like skydiving and surfing and the like. But if you want to combine your love of cleaning with your love of getting wild, then perhaps you'd like to try extreme ironing, which was founded in 1997 and has been challenging competitors to press shirts in unexpected locations, like high up in trees, hanging over cliffs, or paddling whitewater rapids. Now, this crazy fact that I think everyone should know. Well, I've heard of plus-size clothes, but this one's crazy. It's no secret that the Statue of Liberty is a mighty monument. The copper section alone is 151 feet and 1 inch tall, but if Lady Liberty needed a new pair of sandals, it would take size 879 to cover her massive feet. I bet you couldn't get them in Clarks. Now this is a crazy one that everybody should know. Did you know that wombat's poo is cube-shaped? No, nor me. Until recently, no one knew why it was cube-shaped. But in 2018, researchers concluded that it's the wombat's peculiar intestines that create the edges and the cubing during the digestive process. Now that's a fascinating fact. Why did somebody have to go and find that out? But I'm glad they did. How about you? Anyway, that's the end of the quiz for this week, folks. Enjoy it, I hope. Do well in the quiz. I'll see you next week when I've dug up some more funny facts. But this is Rog saying bye for now. Ta-ra!
Thanks, Roger. Fascinating as always. Now we head over to Mina with the weather.
The weather for this week ahead will be significantly warmer than previous weeks, with spring-like conditions now appearing. Due to the time of year, low UV levels are expected all week. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:11 a.m. for the sunrise and 5:34 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 19th of February, we will start with some light rain and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 12 degrees. On Saturday 20th and Sunday 21st of February, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 14 degrees. And finally, on Monday 22nd of February, all the way to Thursday 25th of February, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of up to 14 degrees. So that's your forecast for the week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Thanks, Mina. Now that the weather's starting to warm up, we can start to expect to see the first signs of spring life returning. As such, we begin a new feature called Sounds of Nature, where we listen in to some of our native wildlife, starting this week with the humble chaffinch. The colourful and delightful chaffinch is a regular garden visitor all across the United Kingdom. The chaffinch is a very common, sparrow-sized finch of gardens, woodland, parks and farmlands. Chaffinches build neat, bowl-shaped nests in trees and shrubs. They feed on seeds and insects and will happily visit bird tables, but do not feed openly on feeders, preferring to hop about on the ground and under ledges instead. Chaffinches are present all year round, and more than 6 million pairs breed here in summer. They have a loud, pleasant song. The chaffinch is also known as the bachelor finch. The males spend their winter near the breeding territories, while the females migrate further south. This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Coming up next, we have Ian with the sport.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. Wolves' FA Cup run is over after a shuffled around team slumped to a depressing 2-0 defeat to Southampton in the fifth round. Having the opportunity to progress to the quarterfinals, boss Nuno Espirito Santo opted to make several changes on what proved to be a dismal evening at Molineux. Danny Ings put the Saints ahead shortly into the second half, with Stuart Armstrong rubber stamping the victory late on and sealing their place in the last eight. Wolves knocked out. They got exactly what they deserved. This has been an extremely difficult season for Wolves supporters, having to watch matches from home for the entirety of it. They have also seen their side suffer a succession of injuries and ultimately put in some very bad performances. But the FA Cup offered hope, a chance to remember the 2020-2021 campaign in a positive, warm light, something to smile about. However, any dreams of reaching Wembley and making up for what happened there a couple of years ago against Watford were shattered to pieces against Southampton. Nuno rang the changes and set the tone for the rest of the night. Wolves, quite frankly, did not turn up, and the only saving grace was that the Saints just won by two. The heavy hitters were introduced for the final half an hour, but they were unable to turn the tide. However, playing Southampton again in the league saw a world-class solo effort from Pedro Neto give Wolves a morale-boosting 2-1 victory at St Mary's. Having deservedly been behind, courtesy of Danny Ings at the interval, Nuno Espirito Santo's side drastically turned things round after the break. Ruben Neves coolly levelled the scores from the penalty spot before Neto grabbed the spotlight with a moment of sheer magic, leaving the Saints flabbergasted. Responding badly to the FA Cup exit at the hands of Ralf Hasenhüttl's outfit, Wolves looked down and out at half-time. However, in the second half, everyone looked much better. They went from being nervous with every single movement to measured and precise. The game was flipped on its head. Football can be funny, and this was a game of two halves, night and day. Character and quality were both on display to seal 3 points. Wolves are now 3 unbeaten in the Premier League and up to 12th. They next face Leeds at home this Friday. Albion put in their best performance under Sam Allardyce to secure a 1-1 draw against Manchester United, but it could have been even better. In a thrilling clash at the Hawthorns, Mbaye Diagne put the Baggies ahead after just 90 seconds with an outstanding header that saw him completely out-muscle Victor Lindelof. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's side pulled level just before the break thanks to an excellent volley from Bruno Fernandes. But while United dominated possession after the interval and saw a Scott McTominay shot cleared off the line, the Baggies had two glorious chances to win it late on. First, Diagne outmuscled Harry Maguire to put himself one-on-one with David De Gea, only for the Spaniard to deny him with not one, but two excellent saves. Darnell Furlong then whipped in a wonderfully inviting cross which Diagne met, but stretching, sent over the bar. Incredibly, the drama wasn't over, with Johnston matching De Gea's heroics with a world-class save to deny Maguire deep into added-on time. Even with that stop, though, the Baggies deserved a point at the very least, with Allardyce's men putting in a display that was transformational compared to the last few weeks. Both with and without the ball, the Baggies were much improved, with this result giving them a huge confidence boost heading into crucial games against Burnley away this Saturday, and then Brighton, Newcastle and Crystal Palace to follow.
Thanks for that, Ian. Up next it's Liz, who this week tells us about plans to make the Black Country cycling crazy, just like Amsterdam.
As cycling becomes more popular amid the pandemic, could the Black Country become a Yamsterdam? That is the vision being laid before us as the UK government prepares for life in post-lockdown. A £2 billion grant has been set aside for councils to install miles of pop-up cycling lanes across the country. It could see cycling lanes installed on bustling routes like the Willenhall Road in Wolverhampton, where traffic regularly grinds to a halt. It follows unprecedented levels of cycling in Britain, which has been fuelled by the government's tight travel restrictions over COVID-19. With people forced to stay inside apart from essential travel, cycling and walking has allowed many to escape the confines of their homes. This prolonged period of lockdown has also allowed people to reassess their lifestyles and daily habits. Now the government is aiming to capitalise on this sudden shift in public mood. The government recently announced its package for councils to install emergency bicycle lanes across the country. The move was welcomed by Black Country council leaders, who are keen to improve cycling infrastructure on our congested roads. Wolverhampton council leader Ian Brookfield said, "We don't just want pop-up lanes, we want permanent lanes, thank you very much." The upsurge in cycling, the huge numbers of people cycling, it is phenomenal. I've already been speaking to my colleagues on the council about receiving a share of the government's grant in respect of creating new cycle lanes, widening pavements, having dedicated cycle lanes and safer cycling routes. Places like the Willenhall Road, the I-54 Business Park and the West Side development could all feature cycling lanes, he added. But while the government's initiative will be welcomed by many, the UK still falls behind its European counterparts in terms of cycling infrastructure. In Amsterdam, Holland, there are 320 miles of cycle lanes. The city is usually ranked the world's second most bike-friendly, just behind Copenhagen in Denmark. In comparison, it is said the largest cycling network in any British city is Birmingham due to its 100-mile canal network. Cycling UK, a charity, has called for new pop-up lanes to be installed in the second city. The organisation says a mere 100 miles of pop-up lanes across 10 English cities would allow millions of people to cycle safely each day. In Dudley, the council is looking at establishing new cycling routes along old canal towpaths, disused railway lines, parks and green spaces. They're an ideal place for walking and cycling away from busy roads, said the borough's council leader, Patrick Harley, who welcomed the government's grants for new cycling lanes. He continued, "This is excellent news and a welcome boost to our work to get people out of their cars and onto sustainable forms of transport such as cycling and walking. I've asked officers to look into the potential for this funding pot, what can be achieved in the borough. In the short term, there will be some opportunities to support people walking and cycling through temporary measures, as long as they are in the right places." A council spokesman said factors like impacts on traffic, such as on buses and emergency vehicles, would determine the locations of new cycle lanes. Sandwell Council is also looking to its canal network in a bid to establish cycling routes. Routes are particularly being looked at around the £50 million aquatic centre in Smethwick, which will host events in the 2022 Birmingham Commonwealth Games. "I've been prioritising the canalways in connection with the aquatic centre in particular, which will be a catalyst for improvements," said the council's leader, Yvonne Davis. "Cycle routes are already part of the planning. The Canal and River Trust is working in partnership with us. Clearly, COVID-19 is a catalyst and we need to be promoting cycling as a safe way to travel. But not all council bosses are so enthusiastic about the idea." Walsall council leader Mike Bird said, "I find at this point in time now, because there are less cars on the road, cyclists are taking ownership of the road. With the pop-up lanes, cars would be mingling with riders on a regular basis. We are told we need to give cyclists more distance when overtaking. And suddenly, at this point, I see cyclists riding 2, 3 or 4 abreast in the road. It makes it extra dangerous for cars to pass. If you look at Amsterdam, the use of bikes there is long established. Therefore, in many places where cyclists are permitted, cars aren't allowed. There are car-free zones. I do believe there has been an upsurge in cycling, but before I say yes to pop-up lanes, we have to look at road safety. To me, I think the challenge is insurmountable." One man who knows a lot about cycling is Hugh Porter, MBE, who won 4 world titles in the individual pursuit during an illustrious sporting career alongside a Commonwealth Games gold medal. He said, "I absolutely welcome plans for new cycle lanes. It has got several benefits. Of course, health is very important. If we can get more cyclists on the road, there will be less motorists. Subsequently, there will be less air pollution. That is something everyone is going on about at the moment. Also, it gives people the opportunity to cycle more safely if there are less cars on the road." He continued, "There is a cycle lane on the Tettenhall Road," he said. "That is a very good cycling lane. But you do get people parking in the lane. I think you need to have a symbol that says cycling only on the lane. Thousands of people have taken part in the mass cycling event Velo Birmingham and Midlands in recent years, although last May's event had to be cancelled amid the coronavirus pandemic. With the UK's population ever increasing and more cars driving on the road, a need to find a greener and alternative transport system is critical. Cycling could form part of the answer.
Thanks for that, Liz. It's now time to find out how many questions you got right in our flashback quiz. So, Mina, do you have the answers all lined up for us?
I have. So, here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. What was the wingspan of the prehistoric dragonfly? The answer, 2.5 feet. Question 2. How many words is Shakespeare thought to have invented? And the answer, over 1,700. Question 3. What was the nationality of the man killed in bed by a falling cow? And it was Brazilian. Question 4. What activity has been included as an extreme sport? And the answer here, of course, is ironing. Question 5. What size shoe would fit the feet on the Statue of Liberty? And the answer here is 879. And finally, question 6. Which animal does cube-shaped poo? And the answer here is the wombat. How did you do? Now, there were some difficult questions this week, so don't be too downhearted if you didn't get them all right. But you will have another opportunity to be challenged next week. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, it's time, as always, to visit Graham Fisher to hear one of his tales from the barn.
Hello. Some years ago, I had a friend who was, like several of the acquaintances of my youth, much older than me. This was hardly remarkable, since I had from an early age respected the wisdom that came with maturity, and I tended to pick up more on the acumen of my seniors than the fads of my peers. The trait probably came from a combination of living with my grandmother and having no siblings, but let me not digress. Back to my friend, sadly no longer with us, but whose pronouncements still resonate with me. One such was his take on coincidence, which he dismissed as the good Lord having a laugh. Yet behind his irreverent cynicism, he may have had a point of which recent events have served to persuade me. Coincidence is defined by the Oxford English Dictionary as a remarkable concurrence of events or circumstances which have no apparent causal connection. The first known usage is from around 1605, and the concept has exercised thinkers ever since. The subject has crossed boundaries of philosophy and mathematics, where sceptics such as Jules Charpak and Henry Brock suggest that coincidence may be explained by a mathematical consequence of apophenia, the human tendency to perceive meaningful patterns within random data. The truth is, our personal definition will inevitably be guided by our experiences. So I would like to relate one of mine, a series of apparently unrelated circumstances that, perhaps still mindful of my old friend, I'm struggling to convincingly apply the word coincidence as I understand it. Allow me to set the scene. The area around the junction of the A449 with the A458 at Stourton was the site of various inns for more than 300 years. The final incarnation of the Stuponian Foley Arms Hotel to afford its grand full title, a huge roadhouse geared towards the increasingly ubiquitous motorist, and which boasted one of the last open-air lidos in the area, was built in the 1930s, adjacent to the smaller 18th-century version that it replaced. By 2010, its fabric was in sore need of attention, and the disused lido had been long reclaimed by nature. The inn and lido were demolished, and the site is now housing. But the name lingers in both the memories of residents and by dint of the Stewpony Lock on the Staffordshire and Worcestershire Canal, directly across the road. In its heyday, the inn was a key stop on the Kinver Light Railway that ran between Wollaston and Kinver between 1901 and 1930, and being roughly halfway along the line, the inn became hugely popular with thirsty passengers. The origin of the name Stewpony remains a puzzle. One explanation suggests it to be a corruption of the Latin stauri pons, meaning, quite literally, Stour Bridge, albeit the eponymous town is some distance away. Another points to the monasteries in the area, where the monks ate a diet of carp that were kept in stew ponds. But perhaps the most convincing reason is offered by the Reverend Sabine Baring Gould. Variously an Anglican priest, scholar, biographer and antiquarian, he's most widely remembered for composing the words to Onward Christian Soldiers in 1865 that were set to rousing musical effect by Arthur Sullivan in 1871. He was also a novelist and a frequent visitor to the Kinver area nearby. His 1898 novel, Bladys of the Stewpony, is a gripping tale that's alternatively a historic novel and a work of romance that offers a vivid contemporary account of the privations of women at the turn of the 18th century, as evinced through the experiences of our eponymous heroine, Bladys Ree, described in the introduction as commonly known as Stewpony Blah. Although the story is fictional, as with many of Baring Gould's works, the settings and historical aspects are well researched and highly accurate. Thus, his precision affords a measure of credence to his own definition of Stewpony, where in Chapter 2 he relates, and I quote, "An old soldier in the wars of Queen Anne, a native of the place, settled there when her wars were over, and, as was customary with old soldiers, set up an inn near the bridge at the crossroads. He had been quartered at Estepona in the south of Spain, and thence he had brought a Spanish wife. Partly in honour of her, chiefly in reminiscence of his old military days, he entitled his inn the Estepona Tavern, the Spanish name in English mouths becoming rapidly transformed into Stewpony." The tribulations of Bladys are even now a riveting read, and one of my favourite books as it happens. Our heroine eventually leaves her torrid past behind her and finds a happy new life with her saviour on faraway canals. Ah, the canals. A pang of empathy, the trigger word. Having been a waterways enthusiast for all of my life, could my interest in Bladys be my own causal connection or apophenia for three particular coincidences? In the earliest days of cinematography, the novel was made into a film by Benjamin Priest, a nut and bolt magnate with premises in Old Hill, who lived in Kinver. Priest wanted to make a film of the story based around his home area, so he set up a film company in the summer of 1919 and did exactly that. It starred Marguerite Fox in the title role, with other luminaries of the day including Arthur Chisholm, Wyndham Guys, James Broadhurst, Noel Graham, Nan Carroll, and one Irene Priest, Benjamin's own daughter. The filming took place at many of the locations mentioned in the book, such as the Holy Austin Rockhouses, although it's believed the Whittington Inn a mile or so along the A449 is thought to have doubled as the 18th century Stewpony, which by then was a busy stop on the Kimberlite Railway, and thus with its tram and overhead wires no longer in keeping. The film premiered on the 18th of September 1919 at Benjamin Priest's Grand Theatre in Old Hill, adjacent to his factory. Although apparently not a national success, it was still being shown in the Grand up to 1922, whereupon it was placed in storage. The film was largely destroyed during a clear out of the cinema in the 1950s, and only a few still survive. Now, coincidence one. My late father, Ronald, was an employee of Benjamin Priest for almost all of his working life until his untimely death in 1989. Coincidence too. He told me how, as a young man in the 1950s, he was part of a team tasked with clearing out the Grand Theatre. It's therefore highly likely that my own father was in part responsible, albeit unwittingly, for the loss of the film version of one of my favourite books. All of this was a long time ago, so let me bring my tale bang up to date with coincidence number 3, the most recent I have unearthed. For the same reason of being in keeping that filming was transferred from Stew Pony to the Whittington, which is latterly renamed, Priest used other locations that were still much as they were in the 18th century. And one of them is the tiny village of Pembridge, just over the hill from where I now live on the borders. So, having established a new life many miles from my old, I find a hitherto unknown family connection literally just along the road. Coincidence? Let someone far more expert than I offer an answer to that one, as I ask my local booking shop to give the odds of all those particular ducks lining up in a row. With such predictions, could I be a very wealthy man? As could, I suspect, anyone who might ever successfully fathom their own nagging coincidences. Enjoy your Black Country, and do join me again soon for more Tales from the Barn.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org. or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!